Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Wednesday night family chat here on Free Conference Call by Yahweh's Design, of course. It is Wednesday, the 21st of February, year 2024. And we've already got a few folks here in the chat room, but let me make a couple quick announcements. Some things are starting to happen. I'm being contacted by some folks, a friend of a friend, so to speak, here in Florida, who's connected with a company that I have found out today is looking into longevity and natural health for people. The lead scientist for this group sounds like he could join us in one of these forums and fit right in. They are completely organic, certified by an international quality control outfit that's like five levels above the FDA. Which isn't saying much for the FDA, but this is a very highly recognized quality control certified organic organization. All of their stuff is non-GMO, non-hybrid, et cetera, et cetera. So they have all kind of products. They have all kind of things going on to help people not only keep the health they got, but turn the clock back. And a lot of people don't think that's possible, but maybe Ella wants to share when we open up the mic here that even in her life, she has done effectively that without the benefit of what these people are trying to do. So if that's possible, then what these folks are telling us that might just revolutionize the whole healthcare thing for Jacob Israel. That's us. We are Yahweh's people. We were supposed to be like Adam, to live very long lifespans, very healthily, etc. But this wicked world that's being run by the Antichrists has made that virtually impossible today. In fact, that's why everybody's carrying extra weight, their joints are giving out on them and everything else, because we live in a very poisoned atmosphere by design. So that was exciting news. I'm just starting to get to know the people. I was on a conference call with them today. Again, they sound just like us. And then, of course, John is here with us tonight from up in Michigan, and he's going to share some information that we've been talking about, the possibility of putting up very usable structures, shall we say, on property where Israelites want to be able to get a decent place to shelter, but they have to be able to do it affordably and very quickly. Well, it reminds me of the story of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, the word tabernacle comes from sukkoth, which is the Hebrew word for a temporary shelter. Okay, now think about that for a minute. A temporary shelter. Sometimes they called them booths. So the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths was when the Israelites remembered when they left Egypt, they had to live in temporary shelters as they traveled. Something that was very simple but easy to put up, and yet it protected them from the animals and it protected them from the elements. And so what John's going to talk to us about here on the broadcast tonight fits that image almost perfectly, only with modern materials. But the idea is still the same, where Israelites like us want to come out of Babylon, get on a piece of property, set up a homestead, living organically off the land as our father intended, but we would still like to have some kind of decent shelter that can withstand rain or storms, keep the bugs off of us, and keep us off the cold ground, if possible. I mean, if we had to do it, of course, we could make tents or booths out of stuff out of the woods. But if the Father allows us, then why not use these very nice shelters that can be put up very, very quickly, and yet they have some insulation to them, and they're strong, et cetera, et cetera. So we got all that going on, and there's a few other things going on that I was made aware of this week. So it's almost like Father's opening up some doors. For instance, here in Central Florida, a very good friend of mine and a By Yahweh's Design listener just got his real estate license, so he is going to assist us looking for property. There's a couple other people I know that live in this area that are going to chip in and try to help find property. There's a few people have contacted me that might want to help invest in something like this, both for themselves and for the group. So there are some things being worked on. I just wanted to pass that on to you. Like I said, it's an amazing time to be alive. There's a lot of crazy, absolutely insane things that are going on. But at the same time, it seems like our Father is reaching down and touching his children on the shoulder saying, didn't I say I would not forsake you? Didn't I say that if you will take the chance and be different than the rest of the world and follow my leading, that I will open up the storehouse of heaven for you? Almost seems like that's a window starting to open, but we'll see as we go forward. But just wanted to share that with you. Jeremiah's got his hand up, so let's see what he's got to say, and then I'll unmute everybody else too. But please try not to walk on top of each other. Take turns and use the raise hand feature down below. It's one of the reactions is to raise your hand if you wish to speak, and then that way we don't walk on top of each other. Go ahead, Jeremiah. I think I've got you unmuted.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add was regarding your comments about booths. Now, you would know this much better than me, but if memory serves me right, the term or another term for the booths that our people lived in was known as sooths or scoots, and then that term was translated into skiff, which we became known as Scythians, or you could also say basically booth dwellers.
Yeah, that's right. We're pronouncing it different, but it's the same Hebrew word, and you're right. That the Scythians were known as booth dwellers, but also those that traveled in covered wagons, because that's what they used. The first covered wagons were not here in the Wild West of the United States. They got that idea from the Scythians 1,000 years ago or more. They traveled in wagons, and they had covers over them, so they were actually the very first recreational vehicles, because they literally lived out of their covered wagons. They slept in them. If somebody got wounded, they took care of them in there. They carried their provisions in there. It was their home on wheels, a traveling tent, so to speak. So that's exactly what Scythian means, the booth dwellers or the temporary shelter dwellers. You know, we like to think everything was invented here in North America, but covered wagons existed a long time ago. Riding horses bareback was not something that the American Indians invented. The Greeks were riding horses into battle bareback long before so-called Native Americans were doing it over here. So, because there weren't actual horses here in America until the Spaniards brought them over. So, you know, this whole idea, again, that everything originates here in America, that's because ugly Americans want the glory for everything. But the truth of the matter is that our people have been doing all these things, just like the pyramids and many of the other things. They were doing it thousands and thousands of years ago. And so it's nothing new, et cetera. So does that answer your question?
Oh, it wasn't really a question. It's just something I wanted to make a note on when you were talking about food.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah, that's a good point, right? And again, I've read a lot of books on the tribes where they traveled. They were known as the Goths, which is a Gaelic term, and the Visigoths just mean the Goths of the West. So you had the Eastern Goths, the Western Goths. You had the Vandals, where we get the word vandal, like to vandalize something. That was from the Vandals. They were a very warlike people. We had the Scythians, we had the Celts, and many of the others too. So, but as you read about our tribes as they traveled and everything, they had certain fingerprints that they left as they traveled, such as the covered wagons, etc., and the place names. Many of them had Dan, the consonants D and N, so it could be like the Don, like the Don River, Dan's Mark. It could be Dnieper, a lot of different things. As long as it has that D-N Hebrew consonants in it, it was probably the tribe of Dan established a fort or a trading post or something there thousands and thousands of years ago. Go ahead, Ella, you got your hand up.
Oh, I'll get my hand down again here. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay. Okay, a little while ago, I was watching it. I put on a DVD today. It was rubbish day, and I had to take time to relax. So I get these DVDs with movies because my television, I don't get television anymore. And something hit me today. I was watching a television series from the past called The Resident. And one of the lines that he said in that series struck me as being the root of the problem. This one intern came in to begin education from the resident, and he was graduated from Harvard and Yale Medical School and all that, and he came in rather cocky. And the resident, whose name was Conrad, told him, "Well, the first thing you have to learn when you come here with your education from Yale and Harvard is you have to forget everything you ever learned and begin all over again." And I thought, wow, that's exactly what we have to do too. The Bible itself has been distorted. Our sexuality has been distorted. Marriages have been distorted. Men and women relationships have been distorted. As a matter of fact, about the only relationship that I have encountered in the past 20 years that seems like it might be the right way to go is the one that Melissa has with her guy at home. That's a beautiful relationship. She could probably tell us about that later. But there's people have taken money as become gods. The main thing that they have to do is have money because that's what it takes to make them happy. We have to learn how to stay healthy and happy because that's the thing vital in our lives. We have to pay more attention to our bodies and how to make our bodies work the way Yahweh intended them to. Everything that we need is within our body to maintain health and happiness if we learn how to use it. And we can't fix Babylon. We have to get out of Babylon, walk away, and begin again. And that's what we have to learn more to do, like those people you were talking about that want to start our communities. That's what we have to do before we can begin living again. I'll yield.
Yeah, amen. It's a dystopic world. We can't fix it. But we don't have to let the Titanic take us down with it. We can get in our lifeboats and row far enough away that when she goes under the water, she doesn't suck us down with it. That's pretty much what Revelation and the other scriptures are talking about. Don't be in that system that's going to crash and burn. Get in your lifeboats. Learn how to do it the old-fashioned way, the simple way, the uncomplicated way, where you share and you look out for each other instead of trying to gouge each other the way the Jews do, and you'll survive, okay? But we have to rethink everything, actually, and Ella's right about that. Everything has been distorted. In all my years of studying, that's the one thing I have discovered. Almost nothing they told us is true. Almost nothing. It's like somebody was quoting there about the word history is just the past events agreed upon. It's just that everybody agrees on a story, okay, because they don't really know. Many of the things we're told is just made-up bullshit that they put on paper, somebody signed it, some government agency stamped it and said, okay, we're going to make this the official history, and it's 99% of the time, it's completely wrong. The people involved, it's wrong. Why they did what they did is wrong. What they did, how they did it, wrong, wrong, wrong. Just like in my own life, everything they told me about health, everything they told me about diet, working, about money, about jobs. It was all a lie. We were programmed to be little serfs and do servitude to the beast. That's what it was all about. Just giving you enough to push the buttons on the machines, but not be able to think for yourself and to live off the grid away from Babylon. So, of course, Yahweh wants us to shake that all off, forget it, open up our minds, work together, line upon line, precept upon precept, put all this beautiful information that's all of a sudden starting to come together, put it together as a team, and in the council of many, there is victory. That's what Scripture says. In the council of many, there is victory. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Have many people come together, work together, put our egos to the side, put our dogma to the side. I mean, that's what the church world does. That's what the Babylonians do. That's not what Israelites do, okay? I don't care who it is. I've never met one person on earth that knew everything. In all my years of traveling, I've never met that magical person that knows everything, that they were right all the time. Haven't met that person yet. 70 years of walking this earth, haven't found one single person yet that you could say that about. All right? So what's that mean? It means learn. That's why Father said work together. You learn, put your pieces of the puzzle together, and figure this thing out. Each of us has a certain amount of talent. Each of us has a certain amount of information. And we work together with one common person or purpose, and that is for us to survive and for our race and our people to prosper and to carry on and worship our Father in the meantime and take care of this earth. We were put here to tend a garden, remember? Adam was put here, number one, to tend the garden. That was his first job. It wasn't even having children. Eve hadn't showed up yet. Tend the garden. It's chaotic. When you let these other people run the show, look at how many times the television talks about something being done that's absolutely stupid and insane that the government's doing, and how many times it's a non-white that's doing the talking. And I include Jews in that because they're not white. So you don't see white Anglo-Saxon Protestants making these stupid-ass statements and comments. They're all aliens. They're all mongrels. The very people Yahweh said that you're supposed to be down there tending the garden and not letting them destroy it. And you're letting them run the show. Jeremiah, you had your hand up. Did you want to say something? Okay, Jeremiah, I guess you didn't have something. Okay. John, do you want to talk a little bit about the project that you guys are looking into, et cetera?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. Well, kind of interesting. I can give you a little bit of background, but I'm a carpenter. I'm a carpenter, builder, roofer, all the different things. I mean, I build things with my hands. And my brother... his wife is from Mexico, and he was concerned about the orphans down there. A lot of drug money, and a lot of orphans down there. But he went down to about 70 miles south of Laredo, and this is about 15 years ago. He lived down there for a year, and they had some land, and he wanted to build buildings down there for the orphanages. But down there, they use concrete block, and it's hotter than blazes. You know, you get 100, 150, 120, and so all during the day, the concrete got hot, and at night, it was like sitting inside of an oven. And I built up here, and I've used the R panels, the SIPS panels, they call them structural insulated panels. And what it is it's styrofoam, like a styrofoam cup, dense styrofoam, and then they laminate, they glue OSB to both sides of it. So it's like a sandwich, just a styrofoam sandwich. And you can build with those things, and they're incredibly strong. You know, the OSB is kind of heavy, but they're incredibly strong. I know as an aside that in Japan, in Kyoto, when they had a big earthquake over there, they had a bunch of those buildings built over there, and all these buildings were falling down, and these things didn't even break a window. They moved as a unit. They didn't break a window. They're very, very strong. So with that in mind, I told him, I said, man, if you're going to build these things, you ought to build them out of SIPS panels. It'd be a lot more comfortable. And when I got back into the States, I made some calls, and we found a line that made those things down in Texas that was for sale. My brother ended up buying it, and he brought it up to Kalamazoo. So that's how he got involved with this thing. But instead of using the OSB, he started with aluminum panels, and he started using steel because it's a lot stronger. But you laminate, you glue the steel panels to these styrofoam boards, and you can get them whatever thickness you want them. And then he's got a joining system where he has some extrusions, aluminum extrusions to put in. And so you can normally go as like 4 foot wide panels by, you know, make them up to 35 feet long if you want to. But on these houses he's building, these structures, these portable structures, if you call them, they're about 7 to 8 feet tall and 3.5 inches thick on the sidewalls, like 5 inches thick on the roof and the things. So it's highly insulated. It's like a styrofoam cup with steel on it, if you can imagine that. He puts the doors in, puts the windows in the shop and the factory. So when he ships them out flat. You can put them pretty much a building in a box, or you can just put them on a pallet and strap it down. The floor is the same version of that, but he puts a fiberglass sheet down and laminates into that so that you can wash them. You can do whatever you want. You can spray the insides out with a hose or a power washer. Outside too, you basically take glue and glue the joints and stuff together, and they're strong. They're super, super strong. They're, probably, I don't know, 3-4 times stronger than a regular building. They move as a unit. They don't crack. They don't break. They're insulated, so, it can keep heat in. They can keep heat out, and you could probably, depending on what size you got, you could probably have a building maybe 12 by 50, and you could build the whole thing in 3 days, something like that. 4 days, and then you can finish the inside however you want. It's just wide open space. So, but it's he hasn't got a price point on him yet. I know he's made big buildings out of them, industrial buildings, and he's made taken the same concept and made hunting blinds out of them. And if somebody wants to just look up ultra comfort blinds, you can see the concept on the thing. But those are just 1.5 inch thick panels. So it's interesting, and they're inexpensive compared to a stick built. They're a lot faster. They're a lot more comfortable. You talk about a tent. You can be in this thing, and it can be 100 degrees outside, and it'll be 80 degrees inside those things, or it can be 10 below zero outside, and with a candle or whatever like that, a real small heater, you could have them 75 or 80 degrees in there. So you can be comfortable and live like a king, basically.
Yeah. Again, I like the concept. That's why ideally we find, if I can find some property, I could work with you and we could make it an experiment to take this first property and get it set up that way with a larger building to be the central building where everything is communal. And then everybody would have like a tiny house because the only thing you need the tiny house for is to take your showers and your bedroom and have a small living room and a dinette, because you wouldn't need anything more than that, because the big common building would be, you could have a locker for tools, and there'd be a library and office building where you could have computers and internet connections and stuff like that. But everything at the tiny house is very private, very non-EMF, no routers or any of that stuff. What routers we do have would all be hardwired, so there's no wireless. And we could even probably figure out a way to shield. In fact, now that I think about it, if these things have metal skin on them, they'd be perfect for shielding out EMF problems, because if you ground that metal, that becomes a shield against the wireless technology in the area around you.
Well, if somebody's good at that kind of stuff, you can figure it out. But, yeah, that's the error. It's basically, it's a sandwich, and it can be 3.5 inches or 5 inches thick and steel on both sides. So they're incredibly strong, and if that would do it, like you're saying, it's interesting. It would be almost like a Faraday cage.
It would be like a Faraday cage, exactly right. That's what we used to use in the Air Force. I worked on radar systems, and we had Faraday cages because our equipment was very sensitive to interference from local TV stations and radio stations. So a Faraday cage, we had to take our equipment in there so no outside RF energy could come in there and disrupt our calibration. So I'm familiar with that. Huh?
you talk about that. A lot of times, if you've got a cell phone, you go inside of a metal building, it doesn't get very good coverage, and maybe that's why.
That's exactly why, because any kind of metal structure that's grounded tends to attenuate RF, and just depends on the metal structure, what frequencies. Now, an actual Faraday cage like we had was copper screening,
mm-hmm.
because we wanted to keep out even high frequency, not just low frequency, but high frequency. And high frequencies have a very, very small wavelength. So you had to have actual screening. It's a copper screening, we called it. It was called a screen room, as a matter of fact. And it had the whole room was made out of this screening material. So the concept, though, is exactly the same thing. I mean, the house, all we'd have to do is make sure all the metal pieces are tied together either by wire or actual contact with each other, and then just take a grounding cable and attach it to the house and put a grounding rod in the ground and run a heavy copper wire to the house. The house then becomes like a Faraday cage.
Well, it's even better than that, because when you think about this, you got a lightweight building. It's very, very strong. It's all basically tied together, but you got to anchor it. You got to hold it down, but you got to hold it up. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
And what I told him, I work with my brother quite often on the thing. I says, you know, you ever use you're from Michigan. You ever go ice fishing? You take an auger and cut a hole in the ice?
Yeah.
All right. Sure. Well, the same thing, you know, a postal digger. And so what he did, he also has a foundry, but he cast some basically augers, okay? And you can take them out to electric drill and drill them into the ground, and then you got an adjustment on top, and his support for those things attached to them, so they holds it down, but it levels them, and then you attach your floor to that. So it's again, it's all metal or whatever like that. So it's into the ground. You got about six or eight, depending on the size of the thing, six or eight augers going down, grounding everything, tying it all together. Then you put the whole building together around it. You know what I mean? So it's grounded.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Perfect. It's not only shelter, but it's a Faraday cage to protect you from wireless technology. So, and there's a lot of demand. I'm getting a lot of demand for that. And right now, you have to order stuff to protect your home from places like Germany and all. The United States doesn't even have anybody doing it. And that's a RF protective paint that the Germans developed, whereas your building, the building itself, the way it's made, is a cage. So I think it's like perfect. But Jeremiah, you got your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah. Something that crossed my mind as you were talking about a Faraday cage, and depending on how these little houses are built, how hard would it be to interwove a thin copper mesh inside the structure itself?
You probably paint it if you want. I'm sure there's copper paint you could put on the thing to do the same thing.
Well, my only thought was, why would you want that if the whole house is basically a shield?
Well, wouldn't the copper be more resistant to the frequency than just metal?
No, copper is an excellent conductor, but virtually all metal conducts well enough to be a shield. You look at your coax cables coming through your house from your cable TV companies and whatnot, that's usually aluminum braiding. Sometimes it's stainless steel, but a lot of times it's just aluminum braiding. So, you know, virtually any metal, because copper gets to be very expensive. So they often shield with aluminum. Copper conducts easier, but it isn't the ease of conduction that you need. When you're talking about a Faraday cage, you just need something that will block that frequency range that's doing harm and ground it to soil. And that way it shields you. So it doesn't have to be copper. No. In fact, like I said, copper would be expensive and I don't think it'd be necessary. Now, the only question I would have is you have windows, and as far as I know, glass does not stop. It might stop some frequencies, but it won't stop most. So any openings like that, you may have to have like shutters or something, like at night, close up the shutters, which are made of metal, and that would give you perfect full protection, whereas the windows may allow some leakage into the house. We'll have to investigate that.
Dan,
the point of it is that the basic house is a shelter. What's that?
Get copper screens.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We could, if you're just talking about for the windows, but there may be so little gets through that it's not a big deal. What we need to do is build one, ground it, and then take meters in there and see how much radiation is on the outside of the house versus the inside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll know. Okay, if we need extra shielding, then we'll put extra shielding on it. But not everybody is completely RF sensitive. Some people are more. I've got some of my friends here that, especially the ladies, the guys don't seem to be affected as much, but the ladies, a lot of the ladies are extremely sensitive to the effects of the RF. And more men are starting to show up with the problems now, too. I think that what they're doing is they're increasing the power in what's coming off of these 5G towers and stuff like that. They left it low for a time being so that they would make all of the conspiracy theorists look like idiots that were warning us. But now they're getting close to the time they want to disable us. And so those big, heavy cables going into these 5G and the regular cell towers, now you'll know why they put that big, heavy cable on there, because it can handle tremendous amounts of power. Okay? You don't need tremendous amounts of power to radiate signals to a cell phone. You don't need it. It's down into the microwatts, even milliwatts, okay? It's very small. You need that kind of cabling and that kind of heavy shielding and everything when you're going to jack the power up to where it becomes a weapon. And that's, I think that's what they're starting to have, because a lot of my friends, they've got tinnitus. I've noticed I've had tinnitus now for about the last 2 years, just a ringing in my ears all the time, and that, never had it before. And that's the only thing I can think of, okay? So the thing of it is, once we get communities going, we're not going to have to worry about liars and deceivers and misfits amongst us, so we can put our data together and figure these things out for ourselves, instead of trying to rely on people that work for the government or for these corporations and all, because they're all liars. I used to work for the power companies. I worked for many different power companies, from Toledo Edison to Cleveland Electric to Florida Power to Texas Utilities, you name it. I've worked for them all. They all operate the same way, like all the other corporations. Whatever they got to do to make money, they'll tell you anything as long as they cover their ass and they keep making money. I used to catch them lying all the time. All the time. Same thing in the Air Force. Liars, liars, and more liars. They just want to keep the ball rolling, keep making the money, look the other way. They don't care who they hurt. They don't care how much they destroy of the earth. It just keeps going on and on and on. It's time to stop that. Ella says, I don't understand what you're talking about. Well, it's a radar technology, and the average person probably wouldn't understand what I am talking about. But anybody that's either worked in electronic countermeasures or airborne radio and radar systems, anybody that's ever worked for an IT corporation or any of the AT&T, Comcast, all that, they would know what I'm talking about. And for anybody like Ella that wants to give me a call after the show, I'll be glad to explain. But again, I spent a whole career in both the Air Force and in nuclear power learning all this stuff. So not too many people are going to want to go to that level. But I think I can explain it in 10 or 15 minutes to where you would understand. It's basically what they call electromagnetic frequencies is what it started out as, radio stations, and then it went to television stations, and they operated certain frequencies. Well, when you broadcast those energy beams through the air, they're going to have an effect. Okay, it's like a microwave. How does the microwave work? It's the same exact thing. There's a magnetron inside that box emitting a certain high frequency that is literally going in there and causing the molecules in the meat or whatever's in the microwave to vibrate to such a level that it heats up from the inside out because of the radiation. Now, a microwave is using a very high wattage, whereas your cell phone's using microwatts or milliwatts, which means a thousandth of a watt, whereas the microwave is using 800,000 times more power. You see what I'm saying? But still, what we used to learn in school was radiation, whether it's from a nuclear power plant or from a radar unit, radiation into the body is going to cause an effect, no matter how small it is, no matter how weak it is. If it's small and weak, it may take 50 years before you develop a cancer or some other problem in your body. Whereas if you go into a nuclear power plant and you go inside the containment building, you'll be dead within a few minutes because the radiation level is so much higher, okay? But the point of it is, all radiation that's unnatural is doing harm to the body. And over a long period of time, a small amount of radiation will usually have an effect. Okay, that's the point. There is no such thing as safe radiation. Even the sun, okay, can cause trouble if you get too much of it. If you get the right amount of it, it's actually beneficial. But if you get too much of it, it can start doing cell damage. All radiation will do that. So that was my main point. I'll go ahead and yield. Anybody else have a comment or question?
I do have a question. You know, you're talking about these encampments or villages or whatever. How many people you think in terms of? I mean, how many families, if you would, or individuals? I mean, are you talking 10, 20, like a village, like 100, or what's your thought process, Dan?
Well, we're trying to start small and develop a homestead, so it may only be 5 to 10 families, maybe. It'll depend on who's actually willing to get off their keister and join in on this. Right now, a lot of people say they're interested, but until you actually put shovels in the dirt, you don't really know how many people you're going to have. But I'm assuming we're going to have at least 5 to 10 individuals that will want to be part of a local homestead. That's what I'm envisioning anyway. And hopefully we'll have like 20 to 50 acres, huh?
Yeah. Okay, 20 to 50 acres, you envision this as maybe 5 or 10 families, whatever like that.
Right.
Growing your own food. I mean, you're going to have...
Absolutely. Doing everything possible ourselves.
But you could have a well so everybody has water. You could have a generator for electricity. You could bring in electricity from outside if you wanted to. I mean, you don't have to live like the Amish. You could.
Oh, no, that's right. In fact, that's another interesting thing. I'll get you in a second, Arella. I was just contacted by another friend of mine who lives in Florida, who's working on a system that will generate electricity at the source. He's working with some other people to develop a system to make electricity on a concrete pad about the size of an air conditioning unit sitting on it, and it'll sit right outside your home and make all the power you need and be almost free energy. And he's working on that. Now, there'll be costs as far as putting in the pad and buying some parts and occasionally some maintenance, but it'll be nothing like what you have to pay for electricity now or down the road, and it's made right there at the property, so you don't have power lines to worry about, underground or overhead. You don't dirty electricity. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's making it right there at the source.
Do you see or AC?
I'm trying to think what he told me. I think it generates AC, but they're going to convert it to DC before it even leaves the box. I think a regulator is going to be right on the box. So the only thing coming into the house is direct current. Now, here's the interesting thing. direct current was supposed to be what all power was, because it's the most efficient. That's why your televisions work on direct current, your radios work on direct current, a lot of things work on direct current. The problem is that if you make electricity at the local powerhouse, direct current loses energy going across the power lines. So you have to have very short power lines if you want to use DC. That's why it was not practical. Now, AC, which is what we have today coming out of the powerhouse, AC can be transferred a long distance over power lines with very little loss. So what they do now is a hybrid system. You have AC power coming off the pole outside your house, off that can up in the air. It comes into your house, it goes into your breaker box, and all of your appliances, or at least a lot of them, convert the AC to DC, because DC is what radios, televisions, and many things like that, electronics, work on DC. They won't work on AC. So you have to have that. You have to have that rectification. I know that's probably a lot more technical than a lot of people want to hear, but that's the history behind it. So when you're making your electricity on a pad sitting outside your house, you don't really care, AC or DC. It's going to work fine. So it's kind of interesting. He's going to keep me posted on the success. Right now they're building a prototype to test it over the next few weeks. So we got a lot of little plates in the air spinning right now. You always open the doors for people looking for property, open the doors for people building structures, temporary shelters that are doable and can be comfortable, people working on electrical energy, other people working on composting manure and stuff and making it valuable instead of trying to put it into a sewage system. We don't need a sewage system. Turn it all into compost, and we have books on how to do it and everything else. So all this is starting to come together. All we need is a little bit of help, a little bit of financial help, and find the right place to start. I yield. Oh, by the way, John, we got Randy here with us today. He's another Michigander.
We're from Michigan, Randy.
Up in Clark County.
Clear? Is that up northern lower, or is that in the Upper Peninsula?
Yeah, it's the Lower Peninsula, mid-Michigan area.
Okay, all right, yep. I'm in Southwest, I'm in Kalamazoo, so.
Yeah, I was just sitting here listening to this interesting topic, because I've owned about just a tad over 2 acres. I've owned since 2017, got a really good deal on it, but just up until recently, I've actually started, had to get it surveyed, which typically some people usually do that before they buy their property, but there's homes on both sides, and my main concern is I'm going to send somebody in there to clear it out. I just want to make sure I'm in the clear and knocking down my trees, not somebody else's. So I've got it surveyed. I got a guy going in this week, approximately 3 days worth of work of clearing at least half of it out. And, yeah, we're going to make room for a cabin.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah, I only paid back in 2017. Now, bear in mind, this land that has no utilities, heavily wooded, you know, all that takes time and money to get sorted out. But I only paid about $4,000 for it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, for just a little over 2 acres. I mean, that's, you know, 2017.
Right. Yeah, right now it's very hard to find anything that's affordable, really. Ella,
tell people, like, if you're shopping, if people out there, if you see a good deal on land, I mean, even if you don't plan on doing something with it, you know, years down the road, I mean, if you find a good deal, you just buy it. And deal with, do something with it later.
Right.
That's what I did. So.
Yep. Ella, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I kind of lost track of what I was going to say. I thought it was kind of important, but wait a minute. Oh, something John was asking is how many people do you expect to have homesteading in a place that you begin? And I think, wouldn't that have to do with vetting the type of people that are needed on that land to begin with? Because we not only need electricians, because from what you sound today, all we need is a bunch of electricians to put it all together, and there you go. But you're going to need mechanics, farmers, hairdressers, cooks, people to care for children, nutritionists. So the people that are going to be starting to start these communities are going to have to be vetted so that we have a basic foundation that is able to run in our community and make it grow. I'll yield.
Right. Well, I don't know. I didn't mean to give that impression, because it's not going to be just a bunch of electricians, obviously, or even electronic technicians, though somebody on the property should have some experience with electrical circuitry, etc. But that certainly is not the only thing that's going to be needed, because you're right. But here again, just like in the military, okay, I was an electronic countermeasures guy, but I was also trained on how to drive truck. I was also trained on other duties. And when you're in the field, especially in the Army, they typically have each guy learn three or four other guys' jobs. So nobody's going to be a a singular purpose type person. Everybody's going to have to learn to where they can step up if somebody gets sick or somebody gets hurt or somebody dies. More than one person's going to have to know how to do everything on the property. So it'll be a multifaceted approach. And the good news is, I know Ella has done a lot of things in her life. She's done hairdressing. She's a nurse. She knows how to knit. She knows how to sew, make clothes. I mean, people with skills like that, you teach. There'll be some other people that know. I know Jeremiah has been trained as a naturopath. He also has had some training a little bit in electrical electronics. I could take him and turn him into an electrician in no time. Randy has driven truck and probably has other skills as well. John, he's a construction guy and a builder. And again, as we help each other, you become like an apprentice. That's the beautiful thing about apprenticeship. Apprenticeship teaches by doing, not sitting in a classroom and just reading books. Apprenticeship is you're out there with your journeyman, who is the master, and you're working with them day in and day out. So you pick up the trade by doing it, and the person showing you and coaching you on you doing it and learn by doing. It's always more fun and easier to do, learn by doing, learn by being shown, not trying to learn it from a textbook sitting in a classroom. I learned my trade in the electrical power industry. It took 4.5 years of apprenticeship with a journeyman every single day. Plus, I had homework I had to do. 4.5 years later, I was given a journeyman's card. So apprenticeship was great, because you went out to the field, you carried the tools, the journeyman taught you, and he'd let you do whatever he felt it was safe to let you do, and you learned that way. And so I know it works, because I've been an apprentice twice in my life, and it's a beautiful way. Ella, you got your hand up.
Yeah, I'll take it down again. What I was thinking of mainly is, like what John said, building these shelters is going to take, say, maximum a week to put up. And you have people that want to come live there. So wouldn't you have to vet the initial people that are there with certain talents that can teach the others as they come along? Because if you have like 10 or 12 families that come in and only one of them knows anything about farming, or in fact, nobody knows anything about farming or cooking or anything, there would be nobody to begin things. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Ideally, you're right. ideally, we'll pick. Personally, I think the Father is going to guide the right people to want to do this, to where we end up with a multitude of talent. But trying to start a homestead with nobody that knows anything about farming, that's a act of futility. Obviously, it's not going to work. So either we'd have to have one of our own members, or we'd have to have somebody in the local area that we would have to pay, or they would volunteer time and exchange it for milk, or somebody working on their car for them, okay? So the point of it is, in the local area, everywhere I've ever lived, like I grew up in amongst the Amish, and if you didn't have what you needed, somebody in the neighborhood would have it. If the call went out that you needed whatever, generally somebody would be at your door within a couple days, and they would either be a truck or not a truck, but the Amish would come in and offer help, or a neighbor up the road said, "Hey, Russ, I heard you need some fence put up, but you're shorthanded, and me and my son, we're here to help you out, but we'd like to get hay off a half an acre of your land here. We'd like the hay off that half acre." Something like that was done all the time. And so
that's a good idea, thinking about that, because I was thinking if like, for instance, I gave up my stuff and went to work, go in the community, and you find that not one person there know how to fry an egg, you know, what would you be eating, you know?
Raw eggs.
What's that?
You know what I mean?
I said raw eggs.
Oh,
Eggnog. Okay, that'll do it. Yeah, all we're going to do is throw in a couple of chicken, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's a good point, Ella, and all that stuff will be taken into account, because every community is going to have an organizing committee. It's going to be.
That's what I wanted to know.
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, every community is not going to be one person's idea or even just two. It's going to be a small group of organizers, and then we'll bring in the talent to help in the different areas. And like you said, obviously each homestead will have to seek out people with certain skills. And one of the things that you're going to want to vet for people for one thing is, are they going to be able to work with and live with the people in the community? Because you don't need any squabbling. You don't need any infighting on your homestead. In fact, that's one of the things that has to be established. What do you do when somebody becomes a problem? Because that's going to have to be addressed. Sooner or later, somebody's going to become a problem. And there has to be a way to handle that. Carmine, go ahead. You got your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to add, because I like to always drive this home. Prior to farming, of course, that's always good to build farms and organic farms, but a quicker method for food production while you prep the soil, because to do a proper organic farm, it does take a decent amount of soil prep, is, of course, hydroponics.
Well, that's where you come in. You can show us, because you've been studying hydroponics for years now. You can teach us.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
You're the
hydroponics expert amongst our crowd, because you've actually been doing it.
Dan, have you guys ever looked into the electric farming, whatever like that, where you put like a wire down in the ground, and it actually pulls the energy out of the air and puts it into the plants? Have you seen any of that stuff?
I've seen it, but, you know, I grew up in farming communities, and nobody did that. And we had bountiful crops. I don't know why you would need to do that.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard that it will enhance it quite a bit. You know, I mean, if you got a bountiful crop, so you'd have a double bountiful crop if that was the case. You know, I mean, you know.
Well, there you go. We give that job to Jeremiah, since he's our hydroponics guy, and tell him to set a quarter of an acre off somewhere and try it and see if it works.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, there's nobody knows as much as everything. I know Ella sounds concerned, but you know, everybody is good at something. Okay, I'm if you want to know about roofing and slate and stuff like that and building, I forgot more than most people ever know. Okay, but
right.
But I don't know anything about electronics. You know, I'm not a mechanic. I know enough to get myself in trouble, but other people are good at that stuff and they enjoy it, you know? So, I mean, same kind of thing. Everybody's going to do what they're best at.
Exactly. That's why there's diversity amongst Israelites in communities. It always works out that way. You've got some people that like things that other people don't like. And so you end up with a smorgasbord of talent, and everything works. And again, if you are missing something, you put the word out amongst the communities that, hey, we could use a midwife, or we could use somebody that is really good at plastering or whatever. And next thing you know, somebody says, hey, we heard about you having a need. Our family wants to start on a homestead, and we've been vetted that we're clean and drug-free, and, you know, we're good white people, and we want to live in your community and help, and I've got the talent you need. It'll work. I know in my gut it'll work. I know it'll work. We just have to build it. As that movie says, if you build it, they will come. We've just needed to have a door open to bring all the pieces together in one spot and make this thing work. And once we make one work, it can be duplicated anywhere. But you got to start with one. You got to start somewhere and do it and dedicate it that it will be 100% done the Father's way. Forget man's law. Forget all the bullshit that the ag departments talk about and all the other crap. No, this is going to be done strictly by the book, and there's only one book we care about and nothing else. So anybody that wants to go into the way the ag department says or the government agencies want to do it, then stay away from us, because that's all going to fail. Babylon's going to burn down. Go ahead, Jeremiah.
Yeah, I actually looked into that sort of growing before, which the technical term is electroculture. I've tried it on a small scale in pots, in which I took copper wire and I stuck it in the pots, because supposedly it's supposed to work the same. And I had done it with one with the wire, and then, of course, the control, which no wire. The only difference I saw was in, like, the first couple weeks, in which the one with the copper wire seemed to have grown a little faster with a little more green, but after about week 3 or 4, there is almost no difference. The one without the wire caught up to the one with the wire. Now, that was indoors in a pot, not outside. I'm going to redo the experiment on my brother's property, where I am establishing a farm in grow beds, and I'm going to actually try a different method of electroculture, which a lot of people say is supposed to be more beneficial, and that is you actually attach a charge, not a lot, like only like 1 to 5 volts, to the wire to literally send and force electricity into the ground. And I'm going to see if that does anything. But at least from my own small little test indoors, I didn't see much merit to it. But again, I don't know if it's because I'm in a building and not outside where all the electromagnetic energy is, because the science behind it is the copper wire rod is supposed to take energy from the air, transfer it down into the dirt, and at least my method for doing it outside is I would then attach smaller coils of wire around the base of the pipe under the ground and have it spread out along the ground, almost like a circuit board, to which most of the people who do electroculture do not do that. But in my head, at least in theory, that should distribute the energy to a much wider area and a more even spread.
Well, that's what experimentation is all about. You have a theory, you put it to a test, and you see if it works. That's how most people never invented anything the first time out, and they never invented anything 100% perfect the first time out. You have an idea, you put it on paper, you go out and you build a prototype, and you give it a try. And then you usually find out it either works or don't, or it didn't work as well as you thought, and you start tinkering until you get it to come through. As I said, my father used to say, you can't argue with success. So that's the thing. You keep tinkering with it until you're successful. Once you're successful, that's it.
You know, you're never unsuccessful. You just kind of find out what doesn't work, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Stop doing the stuff that doesn't work and everything else will be fine. Yep, exactly right. But it'll be fun. The thing of it is, it's fun. I mean, all of us have come out of the corporate world where we were slaves and we had to work for people that were half the intelligence that we are. I mean, that was my biggest beef, is most of the people I had to work for that were the vice presidents and the project managers and the instrumentation engineers and things like that, most of the time they weren't as smart as the rest of us guys in the field. And yet they were in charge. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't even make sense. That'd be like sending a guy to be the general of the army, and he's not sure how a sword goes into the scabbard. It's like, what? The guy leading the pack is usually somebody that's been there, done it, and he knows what works and what doesn't work. That's why he's the leader. In the corporate world today, it's who you know, what your fake credentials are, and if you got a hooked nose, you go right straight to the top. That's it. Talent has nothing to do with it. Motive has nothing to do with it. Integrity has nothing to do with it. And that's not the Aryan way. That's not our way. Our way is you rise to the top because you're the best at what you do. That's the way it's supposed to be. And you rise to the top because everybody agrees that you're the best. In other words, in the Army, it'd be like the men push this guy forward because they want him to be the squad leader, and we want this guy to be the commander because we trust him, we've seen him in action, he knows what he's doing. That's the way it is. The men pick their leaders. We do it ass backwards today. They come out of Harvard, they come out of Yale, they got their hooked nose, they've got Jewish money in their pockets, and somebody says he's going to be your leader, and then you're supposed to follow him, and you find out the guy doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. All right? That doesn't work.
If you're really good at what you do, you specialize. I mean, there's nothing wrong with knowing a whole lot about a lot of things, but if you get really specialized, you get very good at it, and somebody wants what you can do, at that time you can hold your own role in a thing. I mean, I've done that before where you got these really complicated jobs, and they asked me several times, you know, when you do this, will you do this? I said, no, I don't want to do that. So they said, okay, now listen, I'll do it, but I'm going to tell you how it's going to get done, and your job is to shut up and write the checks. And I don't want to hear anything else about it. And you can make it stick.
Right.
So, I mean, right. And that's not being cocky. That's, I mean, you know, at some point in time, you got to take credit for what it is you know. And everybody is good at something, you know, and thank God for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're allowed to be a little cocky, just like when I played football. Typically, the quarterback was a little bit cocky, okay? And the coach used to remind us linemen that you want your quarterback to be a little cocky. He's the general on the playing field, and he's responsible for calling the plays and executing the plays. And that takes a special talent. So he's allowed to be a little bit cocky. So that's the way it was. So, you know, us linemen, we didn't particularly care for it, but the coach we thought was right, and it's sort of that way. If the guy knows what he's doing, then you shut up and let him run the show, so to speak. Again, you can't argue with success.
You know, all you got to do is block a little bit. He'll get the idea.
Well, one day at practice, all of us linemen agreed to step aside when the quarterback said hut, hut, and the ball was snapped, all of us stood up and turned our sides to the defensive lineman, and the defensive lineman went in there and cleaned his clock. and the coach came over and gave us a real serious scolding for doing what we did, because we could have got the quarterback hurt. But that was our way of telling him he needed to take his cockiness a step down or two. But, yep. The thing of it is, we'll make it work. It'll work. If our hearts are right, if our minds are in one accord, if we all see the same goal and we're all working towards the same goal, it can't help but work.
And how is that different than a commune, Dan?
It's, well, the idea of a commune sort of came out of, as far as I know, came out of the hippie movement. And they weren't trying to accomplish anything. As far as I know, a commune's main thing was they were just all going to live in the same area because they all wanted to live the hippie lifestyle. I don't think they were trying to create what we're trying to create. Maybe I'm wrong, because I'm certainly not an expert. But
the original settlements in the United States, you know, the pilgrims and stuff like that, they starved to death for the first 6 or 8 months. Until they had all common storehouse and everybody ate from the same thing and everybody was responsible and, you know, so obviously some weren't working and if you could not work and somebody else would work and you could live off them, that's fine. But that kept on work, they kept on doing that starving until they said, okay, everybody can have their own plot, their own garden, stuff like that. And then if you didn't work, you didn't eat, and all of a sudden things turned around. So, I mean, there's gotta be responsibility, and there has to be a
We're not wanting a commune is a short for communism. That's not our concept.
Well, communal.
I don't want that. I want the fruit of my labor. But as a group, we're going to assist everybody to be successful. My thoughts are that every person's going to have a plot of ground big enough they can grow their own food. It's not like we got to have a communal garden and we all have to. No, each of us can have our own garden. The idea is that we're going to grow our own food. It doesn't mean we have to have one garden and everybody has to be like communists. And that's why it didn't work for the colonists, because some people are lazy and they don't put in the same effort as the person that's out there at 6 o'clock in the morning weeding the garden and keeping the birds from eating the seeds and stuff like that. You're always going to have that. So the idea is that each person has enough land that they can literally live independently of everybody else. But we're close enough together when somebody needs help, we help each other. Because as the community survives, we all survive. As they thrive, we thrive. But not a communist type idea where everything goes in one pot and you give it out as you see fit. No, that'll never work. That'll never work. The only thing that's in common is that building in the middle, and the only reason that it's in the middle and it's common is that way you can store your tools in a locker and stuff, then you don't have to have everybody in these great big 1,500 or 2,000 square foot houses. Every person can have basically a tiny house because you don't have to store everything there. Everything's in a nice, convenient, common area. And you get workshops in there, and metal shops, and wood shops, and stuff like that, huh?
If you had 40 acres or 60 acres, whatever like that, and you had 10 families on the stuff, I mean, would the land be held and owned in commonality, and then does everybody have their own section of that, basically leasing from the whole? I mean, what are you thinking in terms of that? You know, could somebody worked and got a bunch of stuff on the thing, and that doesn't belong to everybody, belongs to them? How would you break that up? I'm just being a devil's advocate here.
Well, that is one of the ways to keep peace in the community is, to me, the land should be owned by one or just a couple people, and they're basically the landlords. And you have to figure out a way to guarantee people that as long as they keep their nose clean, they basically are like their 1 to 5 acres is theirs to do with as they see fit. But if somebody becomes a troublemaker, now the people that own the property can say, well, you're no longer invited to stay here and you'll be compensated for what you've got, et cetera. But, you know, hopefully it won't come to that. Hopefully everybody keeps their nose clean and everybody works and survives. But these are the things that the organizing committee has to work out. because everybody's going to want to know, what do you have in place to keep peace and make sure you honor everybody's work and everybody's property, blah, blah, blah. Those things have to be worked out yet. And that's what we need to get an organizing committee together, because that's a good question.
Well, all I say is hope in one hand and pour water in the other one and see which one fills up first.
Well, all I know is we better do something, because the enemy's going to starve us to death here pretty soon.
I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm not disagreeing with it. It's almost like a lifeboat, what you're talking about, and everybody has to work together.
Exactly. And when you're in the lifeboat, everybody has to get an oar and everybody has to row in the right direction. Or you're all going to die. So that's exact perfect analogy. We're trying to build lifeboats, and we want people in there that don't mind getting an oar and rowing in sync with everybody else that's rowing. And a few people will be in charge, somebody calling out the cadence and another person at the rudder, and you can exchange jobs from time to time if you want. If you're afraid of one guy getting too big of a head and being too powerful, well, then change out the person at the rudder or whoever is giving the commands of where you're going to go. But the point of it is, it's a lifeboat, and everybody has to agree that this is for survival. So we're all going to have to row, and we have to row in sync with everybody else. But to me, if you love our people and you love the Father, that should come naturally. If you have Yahweh's disposition in you, if you're being driven by the Holy Spirit, you should be easily amenable to your neighbors. It shouldn't take work. It should come naturally. It should be who you are, helpful. Everything that says in Scripture that we're to do for one another, if we all practice that, then how would you have a problem with somebody that's peaceful and helpful and thoughtful and cooperative and maintains their home in a proper setting, and they don't step on your toes with loud music or drunken behavior or all those things. That's what Babylonians do. That's not what we're supposed to do. That's why this country was great, because we lived under the Christian principles and the Christian value system. We had strong families. We had strong communities, just like where I grew up. I don't remember hardly ever seeing a police car the entire time I grew up, in the town or out on the farms. I don't remember seeing a police car. Neighbors got along with neighbors. For one thing, we weren't stacked on top of each other. Most of us all had anywhere from 30 to 70 or 80 acres. So you weren't stacked on top of each other, so you didn't see everybody in the neighborhood all the time. But many times you went to church with your neighbors, or if a neighbor had a problem, they'd call you up and you'd go help them find their cows or fix a fence. You were just good neighbors. You cared about each other, and you respected people's property, and you respected their rights. I remember my father telling me when I was a boy, if you go on to, let's say, Wilkie, the guy living down the street, if you go onto his property unannounced, he can shoot you.
Well, that's the other thing that you got to remember is all the people back then were armed, and it wasn't. You didn't have to worry about it unless you did something wrong. You know, then at that point in time, you would worry about it, because, in fact, that's what would happen, you know. So,
exactly right. You know, we understood that, you know, we didn't grow up with this attitude of everybody owes me anything, everything, and I can do whatever I want. And no, we grew up just the opposite. That's the neighbor's land. You don't go on the neighbor's land without getting permission. You just don't do it. First of all, it's going to piss the neighbor off, and he's going to call your dad, and your dad's going to give you a whooping. That's number one. Number two, if they're not sure what you're up to, you could end up getting shot.
Oh, now, come on, Dan. When you were younger, like as the neighbor's daughter was good-looking, you go on the land. Come on.
No. Oh, no. No, 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 no. I never trespassed. Not one time. There wasn't a girl good-looking enough that I would go out there and take a chance getting shot. Nope, sorry. Nope, not going to do it. Now, if you want to flirt, you do it at church, or you do it at school, or you do it somewhere else, but you don't do it out in the woods, away from town, on somebody's property. They could put you in a hole out there, and they'd never find you.
Yeah.
The point of it is we were raised that way. We were raised that you don't step on other people's toes. You just don't do it. You don't do it. It was just too easy to call the neighbor up and say, "Hey, my dog's out and he's over in your pasture field over there. Do you mind if I go over and get him?" "Oh, hell yeah, go ahead." That sort of thing. You know, see what I'm saying? I don't remember a neighbor ever refusing.
I'm teasing, Dan. I'm teasing. Come on.
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes I get too serious.
I'm teasing.
Sometimes I miss that. Sorry.
I see that. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. We're in the same peer group, so we understand. We understand. But I think there are some neat things coming together here. I'm really hoping it turns into something. Like I said, and I really hope this outfit I talked with today that has the information about longevity and slowing down or even reversing aging and helping people with the different healing modalities that are out there. If that is sincere and if it works, we're going to be screaming that from the rooftops, because what I looked at on their website makes a lot of sense. And the other part that I like was the person that talked to me today said that they would like me to try their detox program for myself, right? Apparently free of charge. And if I like it, then I'll talk further, and then we will also tell other people about it. Yeah, go ahead, Jeremiah.
What's the name of the website?
I'm going to send it out by email. I'll send it to you. There's a few websites, and you would ask me that, and I don't have it in front of me. Hold on a minute. I'll see if I can find it here. Again, I just found about late this afternoon is when I first heard about this. So I have to get my notes. The company, one of the products is called Pure Body Extra. It's a detox program. I like the name of the company. The one company is Touchstone Essentials. And the doctor that's part of the advisory board is Dr. Bill Andrews, and I read a couple articles on him. He's a scientist and an entrepreneur, and he's done a ton of work in longevity. My secret, thegoodinside.com. It's and that's all together, no spaces. And the other company is Sierra Sciences, Biotech for Enhanced Living. I'm checking them out, and if I like what I see and everything, I will send all this around to everybody. But everything that the man told me on the phone and everything I read on their website, again, they sound like people that could join in on this conversation, and they would be right at home. So
now, I did Google Pure Body Extra, and Touchstone Essentials was the first to pop up. Without even clicking on the website, just reading the little blurb on Google, it's a zeolite spray. Now, that is interesting, because I just the other week was talking to my brother about the powerful benefits of zeolite. I used to take zeolite back when I was mentoring under Dr. Snow. And back in 2015 or 2016, I created a zeolite-centered protocol for the whole Ebola scare for friends of mine who are terrified of catching Ebola and blah, blah, blah. I created a zeolite-centered protocol to either guarantee you will never catch Ebola Or if you caught Ebola, it'll basically eliminate it from the body within a day to where you won't have any damaging effects. Of course, that's until I learned what I know today about old viruses. And so exactly what was Ebola, I don't know, but I know it's not a virus. But that's beside the point. The point is, zeolite itself, from what I've studied, the main benefits of zeolite is that it is a tiny particle, and it's a negatively charged particle. And as we learned in school, you know, negative charges attract. So a negative charged particle will attract positive charged particles in the body. And it just so happened that God set everything up that all your bad stuff in the body, whether it's bad toxins, bad germs, bad metals, heavy metals, and even fake synthetic minerals are all positively charged particles. Your good bacteria, which is your gut microbiome, the organic minerals that belong there, the white blood cells and everything that belongs in your body are negatively charged. So the zeolite will be literally, essentially harmless to the human body, much the same way that distilled water is harmless to the body. You'll never lose minerals or vitamins from your body drinking distilled water. I've read the papers. The science is flawed. Because when they study your urine, drink it distilled water, and they find all these minerals and stuff, quote, leaving the body, what they don't tell you is that's the synthetic, the bad vitamins and minerals that the body can't even use anyway.
Yeah, it's what the lying by omission. Yeah, very
Jeremiah,
good.
Can you spell zeolite? Is it Z-E-O? What exactly is zeolite? I mean, is that just proprietary name? What is it? Aluminum? Is it metal? Is it copper? Is it organic? What is it? Spell it for me.
Zeolite is a it's an organic compound. It's Z-O, Z-E-O-L-I-T-E.
Okay, zeolite. Okay. So that's some kind of a proprietary name of something, but it's it's an organic compound. Is it? I mean. Is it made? Is it something that you distill out? What exactly is it? I'm totally in the dark here.
Zeolite isn't made. It's a natural compound. It's a it's a mineral. It's a very porous mineral. So you could think of it like a almost like a sponge with millions and millions of little pores in it. But it's extremely fine and it's small and it's because of the porousness of this mineral, it has a very high absorbency. So it just absorbs things into it that are positively charged. So the little pores in the zeolite will attract and capture the bad microbes, the heavy metals, the toxins, and stick it within the zeolite, and then it'll just take it right through the body, and then you defecate all the bad stuff into the toilet.
Or into the is Dan will talk about the compost it out, you know, and it takes it through. So it's that's what I was saying. It absorbs the stuff, and then your body expels it. So you keep on putting some new stuff in, and it's like a scrub brush for your body, as it were. I don't know, yeah. Something about charcoal, and maybe that's what it is too, you know, so.
I was just going to say, if you think of activated charcoal and how it helps an upset stomach, it's the same principle. It's natural, it goes in there, and it just absorbs the bad stuff and draws it out of the body, leaving the good stuff alone. It's the same thing that silver does, and garlic. Garlic is an antibiotic, and it goes in there, doesn't harm anything in the body, but it will destroy microbes. So that, you know, Yahweh has given us, that's the thing that I find so neat. Yahweh's given us everything we need to live comfortable lives, live a long, fruitful life, not being in pain, not being with all these man-made diseases and all these syndromes and different things that they've got going on. It's all poison. It's all brought about by poisoning. And we know who poisons the well, okay? And they have done it. They poisoned our atmosphere, our food, the water systems, all poisons. And it's taking an effect. That's why the zombies are acting crazier now than they ever have. I mean, these people are literally insane. The stuff I'm hearing people say, it's almost unbelievable, some of the stupid things people are saying nowadays. And people that ought to know better. I mean, these are doctors. These are government officials. These are scientists and all. And they're saying things that are completely retarded. I think they're losing their mind. That's why I think Yahweh said, get out of Babylon, okay? Because that system is literally going to self-destruct. Literally. In a very short period of time. And it's time to start looking to get into our lifeboats. And that's what this project's all about. The Ark Project is get in your lifeboats, just like Noah and his family were told to get into the Ark. We're being told the same thing now. This system out here that they have created, that they made us dependent on, is going to go away. And our Father is sounding the alarm that you better start learning how to do things the old-fashioned way, because you're out of time. He's been knocking at the door trying to get us to do it for a long time, and nobody's been interested. He's trying to tell us now that you're running out of time. Go ahead, Randy.
Goodbye, Federal Reserve and IRS! Man, we've been enslaved.
Yes, we have. But, you know, again, I always equate this to like the Amish, okay? If we come together in one accord and we determine we're going to live Yahweh's way and turn our backs on Babylon, I don't think there's a damn thing they can do about it. That's my opinion. Just like the Amish.
Well, in order to do it, you got to put a bowl over your head, cut everything that sticks out, and then grow your beard, okay?
Well, I didn't say I was going to become Amish. I said do it like the Amish.
I'm teasing, Dan.
They do have an interesting custom. Do you ever hear of bundling?
Bundling. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Bundling is when a teenager, or we'll just say a young man, is courting a young woman. The Amish have a custom called bundling, where the young man is allowed to spend the night.
Oh, yeah, but they put the board in between them?
They put the board down between his and her sides of the bed, and the door to the bedroom is left open so mom and dad can hear and see whatever's going on. But they are allowed to spend the night in the bed getting to know each other. But there's a board, and don't you dare get caught trying to cross that board. It's called bundling. So it's also interesting to note that the young men, before they join the Amish community officially, they don't grow a beard. That's why you'll see some young Amishmen do not have beards, because they have not actually said that they will, once they become adults, that they have joined the community, which means forever. After they do that, then they grow the beard. That shows that they have matured and made an adult decision to stay Amish. Because up to that point, they have the choice to leave. They can go the way of the Englishman and leave and go into the city and get a city job and do whatever they want. But if you're going to stay in the Amish community, then you're going to accept the responsibility, and then you're going to let your beard grow, because that's the sign that you're one of them. Ellis says, do those boards have holes in them? No, those boards do not have any holes in them.
How do we know?
Huh?
How would we know?
Well, I don't, I'm obviously I don't know, but I don't recall ever seeing a shotgun wedding in an Amish community. If it happened, they sure kept it quiet because we never heard of it. So, oh, that's funny.
I got a question, a little off topic, but I got a question.
Sure.
What do y'all think happened to Hillary Clinton when they put her behind in that black van?
I didn't hear that.
Have you seen the video?
Yeah, your volume's really low, Randy.
Let me crank it up. Is that better?
Yeah.
Yeah. Assuming that you have all seen the video of Hillary Clinton being placed in the black van, what do you think the real story behind that is? Just kind of curious.
When did this happen?
You haven't seen? Oh, I'll send it to you. This happened years ago.
Oh, where she practically fell over?
They told everybody that she was having a medical condition, but it was no ambulance they put her in. I think it's funny. I think it's funny.
So what do you think happened?
Well, I mean, all I do is I observe, take little pieces here and there, and kind of put it together. Because like if you only get bits and pieces, you don't, or you might get one piece, right? But once you start to get several pieces, it starts to kind of put a story together. So we did make some funny videos about it.
Mm-hmm.
We mixed. I'll give you an example. We mixed up a video. You know, I know some people in here may not like him, but we took the video clip of where Trump said he was going to put her in jail. And then we mixed that up with her being placed inside the van. And then we found another video clip of Trump saying, Hillary's sort of gone now. To me, it's just funny, man. All these things are funny.
Oh.
It's like, you know, you just try to make sense of it all, you know?
Right. Right.
Just having fun with it.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, they give us enough stuff, enough material to make fun of them every day, all day long. The sad part of it is their decisions and their antics are costing us trillions of dollars and a lot of heartache.
Oh, yeah.
I think the monsters need to be rounded up and put on trial, and if they're guilty of the capital crimes, they need to be taken outside and hung. That's what I'd do.
Something interesting came across the New York Post. See if I can get the headline on that. Now remember, because the last few years they told everybody that the vaccine was it's safe and effective. And then the New York Post got a headline article just came out. This came out yesterday. COVID vaccines linked to, get this, it says slight increases in heart, brain, blood disorder study. So now we've gone from safe and effective to a slight increase in some issue. Here it comes, folks.
Right.
I'm sure many of us aren't regretting nothing because we didn't go along with it. We knew.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
I can't tell you many friends and family that know somebody harmed by it.
Yeah. But I mean, for so many people that were just trying to, like, you know, hey, you know, put the caution, waving the flag, say, hey, wait a minute, we shouldn't be doing this. We were censored, we were mocked, ridiculed, called names. Eh? Well, you know what? We were right.
Yeah.
So here comes
the truth. To me, that's a function of the Holy Spirit. Yeah. I think the Holy Spirit warned the believers, the true believers, the people that love the Father. I think the Holy Spirit was telling us. I knew the very first time Fauci got on television when they started pushing all this nonsense, the very first time I saw him, I knew he was a liar.
Yep.
I told my brother and sister-in-law that they had him on TV at their house, and they said, come in here and see this report about this quote Wuhan bullshit going on, and Fauci got on there, and I said, that guy's a crook and a liar. Well, no, he's the head of NIH. I said, I don't care who he is. I said, he's a crook and a liar.
Yep.
I guess I was right. He can be the head of anything you want, but that doesn't mean he's not a crook and a liar, because he is a crook and a liar.
Yeah, I mean, even the videos, they come out even before they did this whole plandemic, where he was talking about there was going to be a surprise outbreak. Well, it's not a surprise if you know about it and you planned it. You know what I mean? But these people are so dumb, they put all this stuff out there. It's all out there if you look for it, right? You know, many of us have seen all this stuff.
Well, that's
why it wasn't rocket scientists. We know what their plan is, because if you're paying attention, they tell us what they're going to do. They tell everybody. Just got to pay
attention. That's the thing. Remember, the people are cursed for worshiping the beast, okay? Worshiping the beast doesn't mean you get down on your knees and you have a prayer blanket and you face the east and you bow down to it like the Muslims do. That's not what it's talking about. Worshiping the beast is a man-made government. All man-made governments referred to in the Bible as beasts. You worship the beast by doing what the beast says. You shut your brain off. You shut off your communications with your Heavenly Father because you're so afraid of the beast and you want to be loved by the beast that you'll do whatever the beast tells you. That's worshiping the beast. And the scripture is very clear.
They said, trust the science.
Right. Yeah, don't trust your common sense. Don't trust your instincts. Trust the science, which they control. Yeah, exactly. Jeremiah, go ahead. You got your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that about them always doing or telling us what they're going to do. To this day, a lot of people are unaware. Back in 2019, you know, right before COVID, which technically COVID came out that December of 2019 in China, but in November of 2019, A multi-international cooperation took place, known as Event 201, that what's funny is some of the words that these doctors did during this, quote, skit, known as Event 201, was verbatim what these same doctors said on TV regarding COVID. But they want us to believe Event 201 was just a coincidence when COVID struck.
Well, we all know that's bullshit, right? That was dress rehearsal for all the players, the bad actors. So they followed their scripts, okay? All of them got millions of dollars thrown in their pockets. Their portfolios were enhanced. That's how the Jews get people to do what they do. That's why the Jews want to run the money system everywhere they go, because once they get control of the money, they've got endless supplies to bribe people. Endless. And that's exactly how the whole COVID thing got pushed on us successfully, because they just made it profitable to go along. That's all they had to do. Doctors fell over themselves trying to appease those assholes, because they put money to it. Hospital administrators fell over themselves going along with the stupidity because there was money involved. The media went along. There was money involved. Government officials went along. There's money involved, etc. All right? That's all they had to do was use the media and attach a dollar value to compliance, and the average lemming went right along with it. That's all they had to do. Just give them money. I saw it in the corporate world, too. Like I said, you know, in the military, it wasn't quite as bad, but that was back in the 1970s. But in the corporate world, it just got worse from the 70s to the 80s, 80s to the 90s and on. Every decade, it just got worse and worse and worse. And so the corporate world and the government were almost in lockstep. The mentally retarded were in charge in both cases. and they got people to go along with it, the people that actually had brains enough to know that what they were saying was stupid, they got everybody to go along with it by attaching money to it. That's all it took. I can't tell you how many supervisors I had when I told them that what they wanted me to do was stupid or wrong or whatever. Hey, you're getting paid, aren't you? That was their answer. Okay? Not a technical answer, not an engineering answer, not a practical answer. The answer was, you're getting paid, aren't you? How's that for somebody that's supposed to be having a high IQ and they got degrees and everything else? How's that? You're getting paid, aren't you? In other words, I don't have an answer, and I've got no backbone, and I'm doing whatever the assholes want me to do, and I don't want you to not do it because then you make me look bad, so I'm going to tell you you're getting paid. And also the inference is if you don't go along with it, you'll get fired. Okay? So that's how the corporate world's run. People need to wake up to that. It's a criminal enterprise. What's that, Randy?
During the whole scandemic, whatever people want to call it, plandemic, scandemic, to me it's all funny, right? Because while they're doing the press conference in the White House, you know, the cameras are rolling, right? You know, everybody's watching prime time. You know, they're all these media people, man, they got their masks on. This is serious stuff, right? But listen to me carefully. But when they think the cameras are off and the conference is over, and then they all suddenly take their masks off, but yet they're still being recorded. They've all been caught, folks. All these lying scumbags, like what was her name, Caitlin Collins? I think she's with CNN or something like that. She's a media pundit. She's been caught. Fauci's been caught. When they thought the cameras were rolling, right, they all had the mask on. But as soon as those cameras were off, what did they do? They took the mask off because it was all bullshit, and everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm. But even still, though, I mean, a lot of people still went along with it,
didn't they?
Huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why it's hard to have empathy for the people that are falling over out here with all kind of problems, and some of them are dying. They went along with it.
Yep.
You know, what's our Father say he's going to do with the people that go along with evil like this? Does it say he's going to bless them?
Nope.
I don't think that's what it says. I think the scripture says, I will destroy those who destroy the earth. And last time I checked, murderers deserve death. Kidnappers deserve death. Rapists deserve death. Yep. Traitors deserve death. All right? Transferring or transmuting somebody from female to male to female, which you can't do, but you can change body parts, that is an abomination. That's a capital crime. That's an abomination. So these people have committed capital crimes. I'm not going to shed any tears over them falling over dead. Sorry, somebody thinks that's cruel, then I guess I'm cruel. But somebody who purposely does this stuff because they're getting paid or somebody's giving them a bonus, they actually lie and cheat and cause other people harm, I don't see why I should have any empathy towards that person.
Oh, you know where that comes from, Pastor Dan.
Where?
Oh, I was just following orders.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, as I have said many times, let me know how that works out for you when you stand in front of that great white throne. That'll be interesting because I'm going to be up in the bleachers with my drink and my popcorn, and I'm going to be listening to all these people marched in there while they tried to justify what they did. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be entertaining. They're not going to like it too much after the sentence is handed out, though. So it's fun now because they live in a bizarro world being run by the criminally insane. But when judgment day comes, I don't think it's going to be so much fun. I really don't. Well, we're coming up on the 2-hour mark, and I generally don't like to go that long, but it was very entertaining and also very enjoyable having these chats. But does anybody have anything near the end here now? Anything that they think we need to talk about or missed or whatever?
I said plenty.
Okay. Anybody else?
No, I've asked all the questions that I thought of.
Okay. Okay.
Just yeah, bless all and have a great week.
Yep, yep. Till Sunday morning, anyway. We didn't hear from Matt or Melissa. Are you guys good to go, or do you have something to say in closing here?
Yeah, I just want to say Yahweh bless everyone and please stay safe.
Oh yeah, very good. Thank you. And maybe Matt fell asleep because he's like 5 or 6 hours ahead of us.
I think that works so he can just listen.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody then and close this out in a prayer. So just bear with me for a second. And Jeremiah's already muted himself. All right. Dear Heavenly Father Yahweh, we give you the praise, the glory, and the honor. We thank you for this opportunity to share and to fellowship with one another. We just pray that it's your Holy Spirit driving all these different things that are happening right now. And as long as we stay righteous and with pure motives, we just pray that you'll bless our activities and that we can actually move forward and possibly get something started on our homesteads and putting our lifeboats together. We know the flood's right around the corner, so to speak, and time is starting to run out. So help us to be motivated to move forward very, very quickly, and we just pray again that your blessings will be upon it. Help us also to get truth out there to this world that's living in oceans of lies and deception, and we just pray that the different things that are out there to help people with their health and issues and emotional issues and mental issues, that we can help them with the natural remedies that will actually benefit them and not hurt them. To that end, again, we ask that you walk with us and guide us in all that we say and do to thy glory and for thy kingdom. We ask all this in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.